Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking about the world of artificial intelligence yet again. But today, we have a different flavor around this particular issue, and we're looking at it from the creative arts and performance point of view. And for those of you that have been following this platform for a long time, you know that when we talk about AI, artificial intelligence, anything in that realm, we normally apply the words solutions, software as a service, machine learning. All of those types of words is the type of context that we normally apply it to. But for today, we're looking at it from a performance arts point of view, because we are going to be joined by the team from Darkroom Contemporary, and just understanding a new opera called Autoplay, which they are calling Africa's first AI opera. And I'm very interested to hear what does this actually mean. When we talk about an AI generated opera, is ChatGPT going to be belting out the songs? What does this actually mean? So to help us make sense of it all, we are joined by Louise Kutzer, who is the founder and artistic director of Darkroom Contemporary, and she's just going to be giving us a little bit of insight into what is going on here. Louise, greetings to you today.
Hey, morning. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so you've already heard our conspiracy theory that ChatGPT is going to be belting out the opera, but maybe you can give us a little bit of the practical reality. Maybe you can separate the fiction from the fact for us around Autoplay. What's actually AI generated, and why did you decide to go in that particular direction?
Cool. So basically, I think in my work, I'm always very interested in technology, and what I would say is the delicate tango that we dance with technology in our lives, because it has become so much a part of this digital age we're living in. It's constantly evolving. It's constantly kind of like there's a new thing every second week. There's something new. There's a new iteration of something that was there before. So as an artist, I find it super interesting to see to what extent we can use computers as creative partners, and specifically to use technology in ways outside of what it was intended for. Which is when it sort of becomes interesting for me. So with Autoplay, the genesis kind of comes from AI. There was last year, I feel like suddenly it was booming. It was like on everyone's mind. Suddenly AI is so easy and accessible, and it's writing all our stuff for us, and we don't have to really think anymore, you know. So I guess the question came up, to what extent do we still have autonomy and free will in this scenario? And also, I guess, the question of what free will is there within these artificial systems, because they are also being designed by somebody. And I was interested to understand what is the worldview that these systems are holding, because they are being programmed, they are being trained by different people with different worldviews. So all of that stuff sort of became this question that I'm not going to say I have the answer for, and Autoplay is not trying to give us any answer in that, but it is definitely it's almost like a live experiment in choice, manipulation, autonomy, and agency, and what that means in today's world. So the creation process of Autoplay used a great deal of interaction with artificial intelligence, different systems, chatbots, character AIs, to really understand that, and to then later on much more in depth kind of getting them to design the work in a sense, and through that process then coming to a point where I was making choices, of course, but also some of the AI systems were making choices. And the music, I can say, is also very, very interesting because there's a great deal of generative sound that's being used. We don't have ChatGPT belting out the opera. No, we've got real people, but there's a great deal of filtering through machines. So it's almost this thought of how do we go from something really organic and human, which is the voice, which is of course a very human organic thing, and the dancers actually making percussion with their bodies, and then it filters through the machine more and more and more. It becomes more and more computerized, more and more mechanical. And so we have this very sharp contrast between the organic and the digitized.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, Louise, you are maybe giving us a sense that in the creation of this specific opera, there was a lot of AI tools that were used. When it came to whether it's the script writing, your musical arrangement, and that type of thing, there's AI being used in that process. Perhaps there was even AI being used in, stage design and that type of thing and how you're doing it. But when it comes to the actual performance, AI won't necessarily be singing the songs, but in certain instances, what people will be hearing during the live performances, what some of us consider auto-tune, will in this particular case be, AI modulating, certain voices for the audience. Am I understanding that piece correctly?
Yeah, for sure. I think it goes even a bit further than that, but you definitely summarize it quite well. Within the score, which our musical director, Bryden Bolton, works very, very much with experimental sound and also pushing the use of computer within that. So in this score, he has really worked with looking at how these sounds that are being generated through the physical body and then how the analog processes gets filtered through the computer software and digital processing. There's like a great deal of randomness in it, I suppose, because as we know, with any type of AI systems, the prompt can be the same, but the outcome or the output can vary depending on. So this is the case that why we also say no two performances are going to be the same, because the dancers perform perhaps the same piece in which they are creating the same type of body percussion, which is then sampled live by the musicians, and then it gets fed back to us, having gone through this system of filtering and changing, but every time it comes out differently. So it's very much has to do with randomness and chance. The rhythms are selected according to these probabilities of creating an evolving and unpredictable sequence. So there really is a great deal of variance that we can't control.
Okay, I think I'm getting a clearer picture of what's going on. But one of the things I'm quite curious about then, Louise, is as you guys are integrating AI, into your production and that type of thing. If we take a step back and just look at creative arts as a whole, right? The creative sector or, entertainment has had I'm just going to call it a tenuous relationship with AI, over the last couple of years, and we've seen it manifesting in many different, in many different ways. I listen to a lot of hip hop personally, and over the last year, there has in the mainstream there was a lot said about Drake versus Kendrick Lamar, and one of the things that happened during that fight of theirs was some AI generated songs that were, you know, part of that back and forth that was between them. We saw, I believe it was 2022, 2023, you know, where we had the writer's strike in the United States, TV writers trying to have this conversation with studios to say, you know, we know you guys are going to use the AI, right? Let's have the discussion now, you're right, before things go, you know, before things go too far. But what fascinates me here is that I hadn't, you know, at least in my reading, in my research and all of that stuff, I hadn't come across too many, you know, debates and discussions around how AI, you know, is possibly affecting, you know, theater. Right, because it's a world that seems or feels like it's far removed, you know, from that world. But you've already illustrated to us in so many different ways how theater directors, theater professionals, writers, you know, can be using and are already using the technology. So maybe you could just talk to us just around where is theater in the AI discussion? Like, what are the big things you guys are grappling with, if at all?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like you say, that the discussions have to be had. We can't really be the ostrich and go, oh, you know, like, we'll just let these things happen and see what comes out of it, because that train has left the station. It's happening now, and we have to figure out how the moral and ethic codes that go around with it are going to impact all of us, professionally and personally, I think. So, again, this is, for me, what drew me to working with this. I speak in my program notes, I speak about dystopias always begin as utopias, and not to say that this is where it's going. But I feel like we are kind of in this somewhat unconcerned moment where there should be a little bit more concern about how things are being set up, how things are being controlled around AI, how it's going to impact our lives and our work and our way of working. And within theater, I don't see it as a negative. I'm always super excited by technology, because I think we live in a time where it's so easy to say, you know, everything's been done before. Oh, nothing's really new. Nothing's really original. But we are the generation of artists currently that have the most tools available to us in terms of technology and in terms of things that are new that have never been around. So if we can make it work for us, I think that's super exciting. That's super, like, giving us new pathways to follow, giving us really a chance to create work that is completely original and that has never been seen before. I think the downside is that what we see on things like social media, where we just see AI photography and AI video that's kind of not good, it all kind of looks the same, it doesn't really have any humanity in it, it's quite clearly machine generated, which is funny and interesting, but it's not really art, you know. We can't say that it's really art that's going to touch people in any way. So it's a very interesting conversation, and I guess with Autoplay, I'm just wanting to add to that discussion and maybe prompt some thought and some consideration around it, because it is here and it's much bigger, I think, than what we perhaps think sometimes, and it's worth kind of just delving into that and asking questions about what it means for us going forward.
With Autoplay specifically, especially the run of Autoplay, do you see that use of AI, especially in the performative aspect, right? Because there's the pre-production stuff that You've sort of spoken to us about, but at the end of the day, your customer is the person that's coming to attend, the performances. Do you see that use of AI and the fact that I think you mentioned just now that that use of AI brings in an element of randomness into the performance, meaning that, no two performances will be the same. Do you think that's going to be a draw card of some sort? To actually get people curious and actually, because there's a novelty of saying, oh, we used AI to create the performance, but beyond that, the actual performance itself, do you think that randomness lends itself to people being more curious and actually turning up more to the theater?
Definitely. I mean, we premiered Autoplay last year in September, where it ran over, I think we had 15 performances in Cape Town. And many audience members came more than once because they were curious to see how the different iterations of the work affects their perception of it and how the sound and the different endings that we offer to the piece changes how the outcome is. So just maybe I can backtrack and just explain for context. So the work is presented as six scenes or six little stories that deal with this, that's all tied to this kind of live experiment in choice and manipulation, essentially. And when we get to scene six, there is two different possible conclusions that might happen. So they are completely different. Scene six, we talk about dominion, and we then have the option of integration or isolation. And the audience is involved completely in exercising their autonomy or their choice in making that choice of which ending will happen. And they are completely opposite. So the takeaway from ending one versus ending two would be complete opposites as well. And that was also part of that was actually part of the AI output that I got later in the creative process, where I was asking AIs to actually design the work. So if you had to design this piece called Autoplay that's dealing with autonomy, how would you design it? And one of the outputs I got was, have the audience actually feel what it feels like to have a choice about something so that it becomes a real thing. And that is very interesting. Also, was that all the AI chatbots had very specifically always talking about integration. Integration was this keyword that came out of all the discussions. For which I found was very interesting, because integration does mean acceptance and taking it on, and there's like this push for it, which again makes me go, okay, so who's designing that AI's algorithm that it is wanting us to integrate, that it's wanting us to see it as like this accepting thing that we should take on, so like, yeah, it's like a very interesting process of doing. And also what I can add is what was super interesting during the making of was how progressively all these chatbot systems and character AI systems I was working with, how the responses became much more in line with what I was trying to do, and how quickly they were being trained or responding differently in how I was giving different prompts, which of course is what we want. That's what we expect. That it is machine learning and that it is taking knowledge from the data being given. But the development was really very vast over a short period of time, which I thought was super interesting and yeah, interesting to see.
All right. No, that's it's a very unique, it's a very interesting strategy. That from what's the word I'm looking for? From a creative aspect, you're looking at what man's relationship is, what do you call this, from a creative aspect, you're looking at a man's relationship to this technology. But from, you know, putting out a production, using it, you know, as part of the production and something that actually draws, you know, audiences in. I wanted to take a further step back from that and then maybe get your sense. We are a business platform, you know, after all, to get a sense from you around, you know, theater right now. You know, what is the state of theater? Are people still coming to the theater? Because when it comes to your live events, live productions and performances, you know, one would see that the music performances, you know, seem to have remained resilient. You know, at the same time, we've had a resurgence of events. People really like being outside. But one specific form of a theater-based, you know, production and performance, which is movies, has just cratered. You know, people do not want to go to the movies anymore. How has theater fared? I always enjoy, whenever I go to Monte Cassino here in Joburg, just walking past the theater and seeing the list of performances that are there. And I'm like, okay, fine. You know, at least there's productions. People are still, you know, putting these things on. But for yourself, as, you know, someone who is in the actual business, how is the industry?
Yeah, I mean, theater is always, there is an audience for it, I believe. I just think the audience is not always large enough. But theater is something that prevails. I mean, from the time of Shakespeare, it's like, it's been around. People enjoy that act of watching a live thing unfolding. There's something so visceral and unique about that. It's a type of energy exchange that almost you don't get in any other situation. If I think back to lockdown time in 2020, 2021, when all the theaters were shut down, and yet it prevailed and it came back stronger in a sense. I do think there's an upsurge for more contemporary theatre rather than the traditional kind of stuff, even works that are dealing with traditional or more classical texts are taking a more contemporary approach to it, which I think is important and necessary because our audiences are now in a position where they have so much visual stuff thrown at them all day, every day on their screens and in real life. You know, we kind of, it's like overload in a way. So I feel like theater has to keep up with that. It has to be unique and visually very powerful to engage audiences, I think. But certainly the audience is there. I believe that for sure. And I think what we do as Darkroom Contemporary specifically is to look at live performance as something that is more than just going to watch a show and going home, but to make it an experience for the viewers, that it becomes immersive. It becomes something that as soon as you step through the foyer door already, the experience begins. There's a sound that is somehow enveloping you, or there is a sense of performance already in how the waiting area is set up, or there's a visual display that is already starting to tell the story before you even enter the performance space. So that is a strategy that I find is really like this idea of offering people something immersive that is not just requiring them to be a passive observer, but that's giving them the chance to be really like involved and part of the work. Like it become one with it. I think that is really an appealing thing to the audiences that we have now.
We've spent quite a bit of time talking about AI, you know, in this discussion, but you mentioned just now the screens that are in front of people. And, you know, this overload, all of the stimulation that is in front of people. theater, from a theater industry point of view, and I guess from a darkroom contemporary point of view, do you see screens as a friend or foe?
A friend, definitely. because, again, it's like, it's something that we can show our work on, and that we can show our work on to millions of people, as opposed to the 200 people that might be able to be in a theater. So for me, it's just like we have all these different platforms that can all serve us in different ways, and we can have access to different viewers through those systems. So for instance, Darkroom Contemporary works a lot with screen dance, or what some call dance film, where we specifically create works for film. And those get screened across the world at film festivals, but also they can live online. They live on whatever the screen is. And those works really have such a broad audience reach globally that it's definitely a plus. It's definitely great. And besides that, when we are making a new work such as Autoplay, the screens give us a platform to, again, to like entice audiences to tell them the story before they even got to the theater. So our video trailers and our imagery that we use to start to engage people with the work is very important. It's really part of that whole, it's all part of the same thing. We're trying to get that message across, and our phones and our computer screens is what we all stuck to. So that is the meeting place. That is the place where we can reach people anywhere. So it's great.
Yeah, there's so many curiosities that I have, you know, around this discussion. And like I said, I'm just enjoying the fact that I am talking to someone from the world of theater, you know, around some of these things, and especially what technology has done and continues to do, for the sector. Coming back to the theme of AI, then, Louise. Curious about, you know, something that I don't think we've really spoken about, is the, can I call them ethical considerations, maybe the tension that perhaps exists with creativity, because when you talk to very staunch creatives, they want to make sure that the creative process is as organic as possible, right? And I would imagine that for some, the incorporation of AI, even in, you know, crafting ideas, maybe themes, you know, some of that pre-production stuff that you were talking about, you know, storylines and that type of thing might be seen as being inorganic or lending itself to an inauthenticity, right? Where do you sit there? Where do your compatriots, you know, sit, in that respect?
I think, again, it's opening up this conversation that I think is so necessary, and it's like we can't ignore it. So for me, I just think as humans, we have the capacity to learn through experience and observation. And we, you know, the big difference with machines is that they are programmed with a fixed set of algorithms that define how they process or respond. So for me, I can't, if I say I've had this interactions with the AI to develop the work, obviously my own choice, my own intellect, my own compassion, my own humanity is guiding that. And whatever outcomes I receive, I'm still making a choice on whether I'm using it or not. I mean, there was just tons and tons and tons of output that was just boring or terrible or predictable or, you know, like comical, just not the right thing that just got thrown out. So to make it part of a process, for me, is just super interesting. I don't think the machine convinced me to change what I had in mind already for the work. I think the machine at times was able to prompt new thought patterns that could take me in a different direction to explore. Sometimes it was a dead end. Maybe it didn't work. In some cases, it did. But it became a collaboration. And that is again, what I feel like that is always part of my process, is this idea of using tech as a creative partner, not as something that's a threat or a hindrance or a block. It's something that can lead us to new exciting discoveries, and that's what I'm interested in. I do understand there are many, many artists out there who might frown upon it or who might not be interested to work through this type of a process. But again, we need different viewpoints and we need different type of art in the world. So each to their own, I believe.
Certainly each to their own. And then I think on the last point, extending that thought, Louise, as we end off, is to say, where do you see, I guess, that relationship with AI and theater going, right? Until you put on autoplay, I don't know if you would have thought that much AI could be incorporated into a theater production, both on pre-production and then what the audience gets to experience. So what do you think are some of the next barriers or frontiers that either you want to see being broken or that you anticipate are going to be broken in how people are either creating theater or how people will be experiencing theater?
Yeah, so I would say definitely the process of making autoplay was honestly a huge experiment. I don't think any of us knew, kind of in terms of myself, the team working on the composition and music, the dancers performing in it, none of us really knew what the outcome was going to be, because it was so experimental. It really was not something we could have a sort of a playbook for at all. But I believe every process that we go through as makers of work informs the next process, or maybe not the immediate next process, maybe the learnings you got out of one process is only clear much later on, years later on. But certainly this was the most ambitious project, I would say, that I've put on. And the learnings were very, very satisfying, I think, to work in such a way where there was so much uncertainty around how it was all going to fit together. And then to actually find a way for it to fit together, which was great. That was really a great process, along with all the amazing creatives I got to work with on it. The composers Njabulo Fungula, Inge Beckmann and Bryden Bolton, and then all the dancers who kind of had to just believe in in what we were doing, because there was no... you know, when there's no script, there's no real outline at the beginning. We all just stumbling in the dark until we see the light. So I think AI definitely has a place in theatre. I believe theatres are actually very high-tech spaces, or they can be. They can be a space where technology is used as a real tool for storytelling, which is essentially what we're trying to do. We're trying to tell stories in a real way to our audience. And when we have, you know, originally theaters just had little fire lamps that would illuminate it, and that was it. Now we have access to so many more tricks and tools that can make things quite delightful and magical for our viewers. And I think that is where all kind of new tech, not just AI, but where it all comes in, is it can give us the tool to present something that is really, really mind-blowing and amazing. And that's, I guess, what my goal is with it.
All right. So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a fascinating discussion just talking about the intersection of theater and artificial intelligence. And I think one of the most refreshing things about this conversation is that I think Louis said it, that some of your contemporaries, you know, might look down or, you know, frown upon the use of AI in theater spaces, in theater production, in the creative process. However, you know, the horse has already bolted, you know, on this particular point. AI is here, and it's probably best to try and see how an art form like theater can actually leverage the technology to push itself, you know, forward. You know, you can increase a lot of efficiency when it comes to how you produce, you know, the content, you know, from a writing point of view. There's also music composition aspects that are there. But Louise also just saying that actually, in going through the process of creating autoplay, there was a lot of stuff that had to be thrown out because the honest truth is that it was just not good enough. And this is where the experience, the intellect, the creativity can actually have that discerning factor, you know, to say something is good enough and you don't just take what AI produces as being Bible or fact. You sort of have to, you know, merge the two and have to, I think the people in the AI world would say human in the loop. You know, this is where, you know, stuff like that, you know, comes into, you know, comes in as an aspect. Also interesting just hearing how AI can be used as a way to increase the experience or to diversify the experience that audiences have when they go to the theater. You know, a production like this, you know, being different each time it's performed because you're able to use the AI to modulate, you know, certain aspects, you know, of the experience in this particular aspect, whether we're talking about an ending, whether we're talking about, you know, how voices come through, all of these different things lending themselves to creating a different experiential factor, and all of that increasing the attractiveness, you know, of that theater experience, you know, which bodes well for business. And it was interesting hearing that for autoplay, the Cape Town run, many people would actually come more than once just so that they can see what happens this time around, you know, which lends itself to a different way, you know, I guess, of how you put on your theater productions. Also interesting how you know, someone like Louise is saying that outside of the AI screens and, you know, social media, all of these things, where some might see them as foes, they've embraced them, you know, to say, listen, this is how we get the word out. This is how we spread the message. This is how you entice people to allow you to tell them the stories that you want them to. So rather make friends with the technology than to fight something that is already there. So that's been it. It has been a really great discussion. We were in conversation with Louise Kotza, who is the founder and artistic director of Darkroom Contemporary. Louise, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Madewa. Great to chat with you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. This has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.